It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Are you sad, William? 'Cause all the election ads are over?
No.
It's because we traveled in October and we took the Roku device with us so we could watch all of our stuff that way. It's real handy, by the way. If people use a Roku TV or something, just buy a Roku device and you can get all your same stuff wherever you travel. It's real nice. But it meant we got to see the election commercials for Wisconsin and for Oregon and for Washington. And let me tell you, they're all exactly the same. And I also don't understand how it works anymore. Because, admittedly, I tried to skip most of them and I tried to train YouTube to leave me alone. But like when I watch like Tubi or whatever, I don't have control over that. You just have to watch them. None of the commercials in favor of candidates, like by them, where I approve this message or whatever, none of them ever said a thing that would remotely convince me to vote for them, including the ones I voted for. But the negative ads, some of them said things that convinced me I wanted to vote for the person they were making the negative ad about. I watched a commercial from a lady I'd never heard of, and she told me about how she grew up in a trailer park and how sad that was, but they always made it work because, I don't know, little Timmy had his crutches. I don't even know. It was generic. I'm also from here and I had a hard time and now I want people to be happy. Yeah, only I can do it. Send me to Washington. You know, and I was like, I don't know who this is, whatever. And of course, nowadays they never have any, they don't ever mention an issue that would be divisive. They only say things that literally anyone would agree with. And they also don't mention a political party in their ad. So I'm like, I don't know who this lady is. But then later, I see a negative ad about how this lady once contributed money to a group that wants to defund the police and abolish the prison system. And I was like, oh, really? All right, I guess I'm voting for her. I didn't realize. I later found out she was also running opposite somebody that I did know and do hate. But my point is, there's got to be data somewhere. Are these ads working?
I read an article recently that where there are some ads that they look like attack ads, but the person who made them intends for the ads really being made for the opposite group.
So like the thing I had.
Yeah. They think this attack ad will really, like, if this attack ad about this Democrat, for example, we're not making it to convince people not to vote for the Democrat. We're making it so when Democrats see it, they'll be incensed by it. And so they'll come out and vote for their Democratic person because they're so angry at the attack ads against their person.
I do remember noting in this particular ad even as I was like, okay, this is probably a pretty good sign I should vote for this person. It did start with the phrase, once contributed money to a group. And I'm like, so that could mean so many things from so many different vectors about a group who may or may not have had these particular agenda items front and center at the time where this candidate donated to them. So it really says nothing.
No, it doesn't say anything at all.
Drives me bonkers. I gotta be on the board this year, though. I got a ballot by mail. And as somebody who increasingly just doesn't like being around other people, it was awesome.
I just sat here
and did it. It was great.
Yeah, I think this is the first year in many cycles where I didn't get a ballot by mail for some reason. I mean, I asked for that a long time ago and they just kept sending it. And this time they didn't. Now, my polling place is just a walk away. So I don't.
Ours is less than a block.
Yeah. But I like, first of all, the mail-in ballot gives me more time to do it, which makes it more likely I will do it. I mean, if I can only do it on election day, that there's a danger that things will get in the way. I'll get sick,
of course,
or something will happen and I can't do it. But the mail-in situation means, well, I've got between here and here to do it. So there's going to be a day where I can do it. But also, if I see something on the ballot a person or an issue that I'm not familiar with, I can quickly look it up, do a little research before I vote. But you can't do it at the polling place, obviously.
I will admit, in the past, I almost never have gone to the polling place on election day. My historical one is go vote at the county building earlier. But even that, in my experience, involves interacting with people.
Well, sure it does, yeah.
So I'm not in favor.
Yeah, I mean, I just walked to the park. It's like maybe two blocks away for me. I waited. So the polling places opened at 7 and I knew that a lot of people would be going there before work. So I waited till like 8:30 or something. No, I didn't have to wait for anything. I just walked in.
Trisha, same thing.
2 minutes. No big deal.
She went first thing in the day. And it actually went real well.
Oh, well,
by which I mean, but it was about the same time. It was like just after 8.
Oh, okay.
Because her work starts at 8:30.
Abby was there really close to when it opened, and there were quite a few people there, but it didn't seem like it took that long anyway. She was a little worried that I'd have to wait in line or something, but no, I was not.
So is this a sign that they are really streamlining the process, or is this a sign that nobody gives a shit when it's a midterm election?
I can't say. I think that first of all, there were quite a few people there when it opened who were going before work. I think after that group of people, 8 o'clock in the morning is probably early for a lot of people to go to the polls. But also, it was a very streamlined process. I mean, you know, they scanned my ID because our state IDs have that on them now. And it was just, I mean, it was really slick. I mean, I don't even know how a line possibly could have formed. It was staffed so well and it was so quick to get your ballot. They would have to have a real rush to have anyone have to wait.
My mail-in ballot included the sticker that said I voted today. So I gave it to the neighbor children and was like, wear this to school and just weird out your friends. But then they said, we can't on election day because we don't have school on election day. I think it was a coincidence, but it was especially galling. Then I'm like, yeah, the children get the day off. But the people actually vote.
Yeah, it needs to be a national. I mean, nobody should have to work that day. Full stop. I mean, I don't know why.
For the record, I didn't.
I'm just saying. I mean, you know, I guess it's not like some kind of requirement or something in terms of people's rights or whatever. But it just makes sense. I mean, we have. Bank holidays and stuff for all kinds of things and not for election day. That doesn't make any sense.
They're tremendous number of things about how we do elections that there are living, breathing examples in other countries that do it much better. My personal favorite was the each polling place has a designated member of literally every political party, and they all sit down and manually count the votes at the end, and they don't leave until everyone there agrees on the numbers.
Hmm.
I liked that idea. As long as I'm, again, not involved. I know nothing about how the results went, and I'm curious, but I also don't want to know. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I won't tell you what the results are, except to say there are some significant unknowns still.
I get the sense that in general, it did not go ways I would have liked it to go. But
as I understand it, it didn't go ways that anybody would like it to go. Nobody's going to be. I mean, in terms of political parties, nobody's going to be satisfied. Except
nobody got as much influence as they would like in either direction. And all right,
so each side's happy. The other side didn't.
Yay.
Okay, yay. But they would sooner their side have done better. I think nobody's going to be satisfied with the results really at all. But maybe that's good. I don't know. I don't belong to a party, so I don't really care about that. I am
of the general impression that absolutely nothing is good. Hello everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world not afraid to say it. Nothing is good anymore, or was before. I'm not going to do that rose-tinted glasses stuff. Existence has always been a lifelong torture, and we're just finally getting to the point where we can lay out exactly how that works, probably via PowerPoint. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 608.
608. Terrible number. For a terrible existence. Here we go.
Here we go.
For those of you that are just joining us the full time, welcome to the party. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address. What's that you say? Having an email address isn't exactly magical. It is if you are just a hat.
Mm.
The hat has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. People who know about this, which now includes you, you can't unhear it or unsee it. You know, don't try and pretend. People write in to that email address. They're like, hi, Hat, what's up? What you doing today? Actually, nobody's ever done that. Azure Talent will probably do that in a couple weeks because I said it. But they write in with whatever the crap they want. Often it's questions. Sometimes it's topics. Sometimes it's heartfelt marriage proposals, but we are both happily married, so those generally don't work, but keep trying. I like to know I have options. But the point is people write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want. And then the hat forwards it to us and we talk about it or talk about what it makes us think of. I don't know. And that's the here we are.
Here we are. So,
how's your week been?
School is interesting, but some of the work's pretty tedious. Totally interesting. I'm really kind of into it, but as I keep saying, they're taking a semester and smashing it into 10 weeks. So everything's really rushed and kind of stressful, but it is interesting. I do really like it, but it's been a little bit of a slog. But that's how it goes. When I was thinking of things to talk about, besides just maybe giving people an update on how school's going, I don't know if anyone cares. The things that were coming to mind were, not ghosts. this time.
No. Did you run out of the haunting episodes?
But UFOs. So recently, have you seen?
So I'm assuming we're heading that way. I'm assuming the buttercow hat, which you've been wearing pretty consistently lately, has a tinfoil lining, and we're slowly working our way.
No, but the reason I'm bringing it up was because probably the funnest thing that happened in the last week was so some time ago, there were these the military, the Navy, I think, released these UFO videos, and they were all over the news. I don't know if you saw them. Did you?
I believe we call them UAPs. No.
Well, whatever it was. And there were three in particular that people were really impressed with. And I remember seeing them and thinking, oh, that is kind of interesting. You know, I have follow UFO claims and abduction claims, and I read them and I decide whether I think they're very credible or not. And the ones where there are like radar hits and stuff can be really interesting because, well, I mean, you've got actual evidence that there was a thing there and you've got some of the data on it. So, and I never think it's aliens, but I do wonder what it is because there's something there. What is it? Nobody knows. And these were pretty compelling because they were, you know, captured on a military jet radar targeting thingy. So you're like, wow, what is that?
The official name.
Yeah. But I recently discovered this YouTube channel that is pretty good at debunking this stuff. And I was shocked at how easy it was for this guy to explain what these things were. I thought, wow.
I've seen hot shots. They sneeze on the radar thing and suddenly there's a bunch of more.
Like one video, it's typically called the Tic Tac video. And what maybe you've seen it. It the footage is of this.
I've seen Tic Tacs.
This display, and this guy finally is able to digitally track this little thing that does look like a Tic Tac, and it's just kind of going along, and it looks like it's sort of skimming over just the surface of the ocean there. And I've seen this many times because certain shows, you know, like alien conspiracy shows and stuff, like to show this thing, and then they like to show experts saying, well, given, you know, how where this thing is and how fast it looks like it's going, you know, at this supersonic speed, and all these claims they're making about this thing with no apparent mode of propulsion or anything like that. But this guy noted that if you look at the numbers that are on that display and you do some quick trigonometry, you find out that this object is like 16,000 feet above that water. So that water moving quickly is parallax completely. It's clearly not moving that fast. And you can calculate, once you realize it's how far it is above the surface, you can calculate how fast it's going. It's going no faster than the wind speed at that altitude. And you can also calculate how big it is. It's about 6 feet across. So it's clearly a balloon. I mean, that's obviously what it is. But, you know, I know I'm going to continue seeing on television this thing being shown and people talking about how it's going at supersonic speeds, completely ignoring the data on the screen itself, that if you look at it and analyze it just a little bit, will tell you, yeah, this is like a 6 foot object that's only going as fast as the air currents at 13,000 feet. And it's not aliens. That's what I'm saying.
I cannot tell you how much your use of the phrase, if you do some quick trigonometry, has permanently and irreparably damaged our friendship.
Well, I'm just saying. Now, this isn't, I'm not suggesting the pilot could have or should have done those calculations or anything. I'm just saying that.
You're telling me to do it.
Well, what I was trying to get at was how, in the moment, I can totally understand someone, including a pilot, being baffled by it. Absolutely. But once this data is brought back to people to really look at and analyze, you know, some person way smarter than me should notice, you know, these numbers and go, oh, guys, look, this is not what you think it is. And actually, there's some evidence that that did happen because some of this video footage, the file names of them that when the Navy submitted them, they don't seem to be meaningful until you realize what the thing actually is. For example, one file name was gimbal for one of these UFO things. And when the people did research on it, they realized that, oh, this isn't a UFO. This is glare from a jet heading off in a different direction about 10 miles away. And the weird things it's doing is a function of the gimbal mechanism in the camera, and suggesting that the Navy themselves knew that this wasn't a UFO.
Well, and of course they did. Nobody's showing up. The dude with the hair on Ancient Aliens is not a representative from the U.S. Armed Forces.
But why, when the Navy released this information, didn't they say, here's an example of something we thought was unidentified, and we still don't really know what it is, but we suspect the gimbal camera caused this effect? Why didn't they just say that? Instead of releasing this stuff, the file's called Gimbal, so you get the impression that they know. But they just let people speculate like that. And
the same reason that there are misspellings in scammers, things like that. You clearly haven't seen enough sci-fi. No, I'm dead serious here. There is a benefit to keeping this argument alive. There is a benefit to a small percentage of the population thinking there's something mysterious going on here. This is essentially the military keeps a certain level of esoteric mystique and intimidation based on this, and it also keeps them from actually looking into things. If you dribble out bullshit like this, they'll cling to that rather than attempt anything more serious, like actual espionage at a military thing. I've seen this again. I've seen this purely in sci-fi situations, but exactly this kind of thing, where if we can dribble out this bullshit enough to keep people distracted, they won't pay attention to the other things that we're actually trying to hide. Which I'm not claiming that the Navy secretly is already in talks with aliens or whatever, but I'm comfortable saying on its face, the U.S. military probably does a lot of things that in general they would like the public not to know about.
Yeah, probably.
And they probably on occasion take great efforts to hide those things.
I guess, but I mean, like, I think NASA has announced that they're looking into this stuff, and it's like, but you know, we don't have to devote NASA resources to something that ordinary people on the internet are figuring out, and that the Navy probably already did figure out too, where there's clues that they did. So I mean, that's taxpayer money we're talking about sort of wasting, because you know, the Navy just doesn't say, well, here's a thing that was an unidentified whatever, but we figured it out. You know, just tell us that.
I absolutely agree.
I don't know.
I do. I just said.
But do you, so what are, what's your thought on, like, do you think aliens have visited us? Do you think?
Nope.
Okay. So you're as skeptical about that as you are about, like, paranormal.
Absolutely. Stuff. Absolutely. It's another one of those. It's very much like when we talked about last week. Like, I don't believe in ghosts. I cannot swear they do not exist. I am willing to swear they've never shown up on a ghost hunter show. And in the same way, I don't believe in aliens that would be at all recognizable to. I'm not an idiot who thinks this is the only source of life in the universe, but I think an alien would be so alien to us that we might not recognize it. I think the odds of it encountering us on this planet and deciding to hang out and do shit, but keep it all super quiet. No, that didn't happen. I don't believe that happened at all.
Well, I mean,
it's sort of not how biology works. It's not how exploration, like, no.
Well, and there's serious questions as to how they would even get here. I mean, people can speculate all they want about wormholes and things like that, but that those are all, they don't, those ideas don't stand up to real scrutiny in terms of being, what people will say is, well, Einstein's theories of relativity, you know, allow wormholes and allow certain things. Okay, that's one.
Yeah,
that's one.
I heard that dude failed math class, though.
That's one piece in the larger, you know, body of theoretical physics. You can't just pick that and say, well, this is what we're going to base our ideas on space travel. You've got to put it all together. And when you do that, there are serious problems with this notion that you could make a stable wormhole or you could travel this way. And it's also a very good explanation for why we've never, I mean, life, intelligent life even must be out there just based on the statistics. The easiest explanation for why we've never made contact with any of them is because the so-called speed limit of the universe, the speed of light, and how difficult it would be to travel huge interplanetary and certainly huge intergalactic distances is prohibitive. It's just not.
Say nothing of the specificity. We are a beyond microscopic dot when you look.
Yeah, yeah.
And although we are working hard on it, there's not nearly enough bullshit that we've tossed into space now that from any distance people would look and be like, oh, that's clearly.
Well, yeah, that's.
I also want to throw in there that I think if aliens were here and didn't want us to know about them, they probably would have hidden it better than being able to have these things. And also, if they did want us to know about them, they would have fucking let us know. So, but again, don't think an alien intelligence is something we would necessarily recognize or be able to communicate with in that form. That's an extremely anthropocentric viewpoint. It's the species version of civilization was meant to end up the way the West did it. It's intelligence intelligence is necessary for successful life. It's not just one of a billion different survival skills. It is an absolute necessity, and the only way it works is the way we did.
So that makes me think of, you know, ancient alien theorists. They're fond of talking about ancient people and saying, oh, all of their myths and legends and stuff, they were actually experiencing, you know, aliens, and they just didn't know how to describe it or whatever, even though the exact same logic they use for that could go backwards. Maybe you're experiencing fairies and all that stuff, but your brain can't handle it, so you turn it into spaceships and big-eyed aliens. But nope, it's fairies. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, it's the same thing with people who want to push a one true God thing based on the fact that all these different cultures have a similar myth.
Right.
Clearly, that has nothing to do with the way human brains work. It's purely because there's this God and he just keeps showing up places and it's like, hey, we'll do a flood over here. Hey, we'll do a virgin birth over here. You know, they'll get the idea.
The virgin birth over here. Gist
of it. I like to mix it up a little bit, but I definitely have a style and I don't want to compromise my artistic integrity as an all-powerful creator. I want to put, you know, my stank on it everywhere I go. So there are certain themes.
I mean, the things that I want to make it clear, I don't object to anyone having beliefs in these things. The thing that the thing that sometimes rubs me the wrong way is the insistence that the people who don't believe in it don't have any reason not to believe in it, or they're being unreasonable, or they're being scared, or they're being whatever. It's like,
well, and just the very base of skepticism, which is to say you don't pick a side until you have evidence. There's a whole bunch of like, we can't explain it, therefore must be an angel.
Right. Well, I mean, the simplest example I always can give that a lot of people understand, even religious people, is I don't like when a person who believes in
even religious people can understand this,
because
I dumped it way down.
No, that's not what I meant. I meant that it's about belief in God. If you insist that your belief in God is based on some objective facts, it's proven, and only stupid people don't believe in God, that's clearly wrong. That's clearly, it's not just problematic, it's wrong. But there are a lot of things like that that people use that don't have to do with God, but have to do with other opinions that they insist are actually facts. And that's the thing that gets me.
The dairy industry.
You can, if you have these beliefs and opinions, that's fine. And in fact, I'm interested to hear what you have to say. I'm interested to be persuaded to your point of view, even if the evidence is strong enough. But if you're going to do what, like say a lot of the ancient alien people do, and you insist that you have the evidence and only a fool doesn't think that aliens visited the Earth at one point, well, yeah, that's just wrong. You don't have the evidence. You have a lot of interesting opinions and conjectures, and they could be persuasive if you talked about them in a particular way. But if you insist that you've got hard evidence and the people that don't see it are either stupid or ignorant or whatever, well, you're factually wrong. And
yes, that's however, that is a technique that can persuade people of things. And I think that's the point here, is if your goal is to persuade, not to educate, then you aren't going to go for what will make the most logical sense to prove my point. It's what will I say that will make them most likely to believe me? And those two are often very far from each other.
Well, also, I think, though, it depends on what quality of belief do you want them to have?
Blind faith.
Well, to me, that's not to me, that's not persuasion. Persuading a person is convincing them, like, for real, not just bullying them into agreeing to something just so that you'll shut up or they'll feel like they're part of the group or whatever.
I'm not sure the dictionary backs you up on that, but I do understand the distinction you are making. I think the dictionary still puts all that in the persuasion definition, but I do understand the opposite thing, the distinct things you are talking about.
Well, I mean, what would you call a kind of persuasion that's substantive and that involves evidence?
Well, the problem is that very thing you're talking about is still subjective.
Well, I mean, that's true. You're right about that.
I mean, yeah. you can kind of get objective when you talk about facts, although that's dangerous and tricky. Mm-hmm. But even if you do, the significance of a given fact as evidence towards a particular conclusion is super subjective.
Sure, sure.
And I would guess that a whole bunch of people who are convinced in the way of essentially manipulated or just via showmanship are under the impression that they believe because of facts.
Sure, sure, yeah. Some of them. I mean, I'm not...
I mean, it's always handy to be able to toss out that the Lord works in mysterious ways. That's super useful.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
So anyway,
work in mysterious ways. All right.
I don't know.
Other
what...
than debunking UFOs, what you've been doing this week?
Nah, nothing. Just school, and like I said, it's been a slog. So there's nothing really to talk about there. What about you? How's your week been?
Not much. I got to see the Nibblings perform over in Illinois for the. They have a thing. A musical thing that's similar to Allstate, but it's sort of an all district. It's called ILMEA. It's a thing Illinois has. And basically kids get chosen within their district and they all get together for a day and form like a giant choir or a giant band. And they learn these songs and then they perform it that day. And it's supposed to be the coolest ones. And by luck, both my niece and my nephew who live in Illinois were selected this year. And so they were both in the choir. And so we went and saw that and we went and we had dinner with their parents. I finally got to meet the significant other of one of them that I had not met before. And we all got to explain how I am full of lies, which was helpful. It was a good time. And then yesterday was the choir concert for the littlest Nibbling next door that I had to miss because I went out to eat with a friend on Friday and then on Monday they came down with COVID.
Oh no.
So I've been staying inside. And then, of course, I found out about this, and then I felt sick.
Oh.
And I felt sick for several days. Today is the best I feel. I did take 2 COVID tests over the space of enough time in between everything. They all came back negative. So one of the 2 things has happened. Either I happened to catch some sort of cold at the same time as there was this COVID scare from my friend. My friend had to go on business travel. Maybe they brought back a couple things. Didn't give me COVID, gave me the other one. I don't know. Terrible coincidence. Or because I am so susceptible to convincing myself I am sick, there was a COVID scare and I spent 3 days feeling miserable that was entirely psychosomatic.
Mm.
I wish I could tell you which of these is more likely. I don't know.
I didn't know.
Because it does seem a pretty big coincidence to have just gotten something else, but I'm also very much capable of convincing myself I am sick on a regular basis.
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. So I don't know what it is, but I'm starting to feel better now. Also, the good news is, I mean, I had to cancel some things, and actually some things got canceled anyway, but I basically have no reason to be around anyone other than my wife till Sunday. So if I don't show any increase in symptoms by then with the negative test and everything, I'm probably fine. So I always like that where I'm like, I'm not sure this was real, but it's good that I have a few days where I don't have to be around people just in case. So that's
right.
Nice.
Right.
Not a lot else going on. We've been watching more of that Over the Garden Wall thing on HBO Max. It is a weird show, but I really like it. It's good. We're finishing up Reboot. There's not a lot to be said about that. I don't think I saw any movies. Oh, I did see one odd movie. I don't think I talked about this last week. The Triangle. Did I talk about this?
Don't remember that.
So I found it over on Tubi. I found it a long time ago. What I did the other day is Tubi started recommending things to me that I'm like, you've gone insane. But on Tubi, I have a watch list that's like 60-some odd movies. So I was like, let's start digging into that. So I go down the bottom, and this is one of the, and it looks like it's like a found footage thing, which, you know, my jam. And it's listed as the genres are mystery, thriller, horror. I'm like, all right. And the premise is documentary filmmakers. And they got a postcard from a dude they haven't heard from in 3 years. And he's like, I'm living on this commune. You should come out here. We got some shit for you to film. It'd be awesome. We need your help. So they go to this commune in Montana and start filming. And they're not entirely sure what's going on. And there are issues because some members of the commune didn't want them there because they're like, that's all the modern outdoors, like that's the outside world that we've kind of avoided, and you're bringing it here, and on top of that you're filmmakers, you're going to make us look like idiots. So there's like some tension within the comic. Here's the thing, I got about halfway into it and I'm like, so far, it just seems like a documentary about a commune.
Like a real one.
Yeah. And not a bad one either. And I'm like, this is weird. And I try to look it up to see, like, did Tubi get confused and it really is a documentary? But it's a small enough film, like Wikipedia doesn't know what the fuck I'm talking about. None of that. And I kept watching. And I will say it eventually, it's definitely not real.
Okay.
It's not particularly horrific. It is freaky. It is speculative fiction-y. Like, some weird stuff starts happening and hijinks ensue. The trailer I watched had 2 very pointed moments in it that just didn't show up in the film, which I found very odd. two points that I thought really like rounded up explaining sort of what the movie was about, and one that was very intriguing statement that I'm like, I really can't wait to see what that guy meant by that. Not in the movie. I enjoyed it. I think you have to be somebody who enjoys mysterious found footage shit and somebody who would enjoy a documentary about a comic. And I don't know how many of us there are who would enjoy both of those, but I do. And despite the fact it being fake, there's a lot of, I think, useful discussion as to why they're out here and why they're nervous about seeing other people. And in a lot of cases, like talking about how they used to live their lives and how they do now. And it all feels very legit. Like it's very thought provoking, if again, not real. So movie ends. Credits start. Credits are very strange. The credits are a black screen upon which appears in a very severe but sort of mundane font a person's name. And then another person's name. And another person's name. Always one at a time. I think at a certain point they started doing two at a time. Never any explanation of what these names are. Early on, I could tell it was the documentary filmmakers because they use their real names. And it's the same names. And then we start seeing names that, based on what they are, I think are probably the people who played the various characters because they, again, use their real names. And then I start seeing other names I don't recognize. And then I start seeing names that aren't names. Like one just said Bees. B-E-E-S. And a couple of others that I can't remember, but are very clearly like homemade names, like Ziggy Stardust kind of shit, you know? Like not real names. And then it just keeps going. And eventually I'm seeing names that have similar last names to a lot of the people who are in the beginning. And it just, and then eventually we're thanking the town of whatever, Montana. And like the whole credits was just names without any explanation of how this name was tied to the film. And we got to points where I'm like, this is probably the special thanks stuff because it's like such and such county courthouse. And I'm like, we didn't even have any scenes shot, like whatever. And then it's done. And we get a shot of the commune sort of angled up. They had some like pennants that flew and this hill and everything. And you're looking at that. And nothing happens. And eventually it fades out to a red background. And on top of the red, not taking up the whole screen, but good sized in the middle, is the word Tokyo in a lighter red. With a period at the end, not a capital T, but a period at the end. And then we're done. So I haven't gotten around to it yet, but I really want to delve into the making of this film because I don't know what the fuck is going on. It is very strange, but I enjoyed it. So check that out on Tubi. Not a lot else, though. I haven't got a lot going on, really. Trying to get back into functional society. I was on vacation. It doesn't help that the holidays are coming up. You won't relate to this, and all of our listeners do us the courtesy of not talking during the recording, so I can't really get their take on it either, but I think I just hate the holidays now. I think I'd legit just look to them as something I have to endure that I get no joy from anymore. And it's awful. But I'm like, it's just stress. And I don't just mean hanging around family. That's a thing. But everybody puts in all these expectations about how it needs to go and what needs to happen because it's the holiday. And that's on top of the general stress of having family together in large quantities. because shockingly, these people that in some cases I grew up with, but I haven't lived with in decades and have completely different lives, might not relate to me so well anymore. And I'm feeling this creeping stress, and I'm like, it's just the fucking holidays. I'm like, a couple of weeks from now, it's going to be Thanksgiving. I'm just going to hold my breath for 4 days, and then we'll get a little bit of break, and then we'll have Christmas, and I'll probably have to hold my breath for another 4 days, and then finally it'll be past. And then we'll be in the part of the year where my seasonal affective disorder kicks in. So,
I mean, that does all sound very, very anxiety-produced. I mean, I think anybody would feel anxious if that's what the holidays were like for them.
Well, and what's funny is the 80s and the 90s were full of movies joking about how that's the holidays is. And now I'm like, but that's actually how it really is. And I think I'm not going to say I'm in the majority, but I definitely think I'm in a sizable minority of millennials. And I might be in the majority. I don't know. But I don't think I'm that unusual.
Oh, probably not. I mean, that's obviously not how the holidays are for me, but that all the things that you're talking about that cause stress, I don't have those things. I mean, like, we don't have any real traditions in my family, so there aren't really any big expectations. Also, we get together often enough that there's not a lot of awkwardness between us.
I would think so. But a lot of people hold very strong to Thanksgiving and Christmas. No matter how much we've seen you, no matter how much it's like every other time we see you, it's very important. Christmas has to go right. That's a thing.
I mean, we're not even like, so one of my brothers is, for whatever reason, I don't know when this started. Maybe this has always been true going back for as long as he's been married and I just don't remember. But there seemed like there was a point where he was spending every Thanksgiving with his wife's family. Like, for whatever reason, that was super important to them. And so that's what he was going to do. And I think that's what, you know, that's what my dad's been doing with his wife. And we're perfectly okay with that. For example, we're going to get together. We're not even getting together the Saturday after Thanksgiving. We're getting together the Saturday before that because so many people are busy and stuff. It doesn't matter to us. Christmas, same thing. So, I mean, I do think we are unusual in these ways. I mean, there's so few expectations. We don't even care if it's on the day or any of that. But I don't know very many people like that. I don't know very well. Most of the people I know are like you, who have there's very specific expectations. And just even if they get along really great with each other in the family, those expectations make it stressful.
Well, that's years ago, we decided to stop visiting my family at the holidays because they're stressed with only visiting once a year already. And when you add to that the expectations of the holiday, like, it sucks if I'm only visiting for 3 days and my sister is spending two of them in the kitchen freaking out that the pies aren't ready.
Correct.
Like, correct. That. But I also think it, in much the same way that the 2016 election pulled back the curtain and showed us that this country is way more fucked up than we realize, and a lot of people were just being quiet about it, I think COVID pulled back the curtain and showed us that a lot of people are way more fucked up about holidays and we just didn't notice because we were always showing up and it was no problem, because there was enough of a thing that it became a standing joke in the world of parents whining and bullying and guilting their children for not coming for the holidays, when it was literally a matter of life and death.
Yeah.
And that didn't come around because somebody was like, wouldn't that be funny? It came around because it fucking happened. I can tell you from personal experience, it fucking happened, and it was the worst. And I think in some ways it has permanently, like I say, sort of pulled back the curtain. And I've realized that the holidays are this weird manic clinging to this idea that we are going to force a significant moment here that will warm our hearts throughout the entire coming year, whether it kills us or not, and whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
And I think that is fucked it up. And I mean, and it doesn't, there's lots of other factors that don't help. I'm not in it. In general, I am becoming more and more a recluse I have a harder and harder time with any social interactions that's more than two or three people. I don't enjoy it. So, I mean, there's a lot of personal factors for me, too, but it's not so great.
So do you think, let me ask you this question. Do you think that you have a lot of parents who are deeply, deeply committed around the holiday season and they have, you know, their kids?
You meaning one, not me specifically.
No, someone. Yes.
Yes.
Someone who's a parent, has got young kids, and they think, you know what? I want to make their holidays the best thing ever. They have these great memories of it for the rest of their lives. Do you think this actually ends up serving them poorly later because it, when they're adults and they, it can never be like that again, they get very obsessive about, you know, whether or not they're enjoying the holidays or whether or not when they have kids, their kids are enjoying the holidays. Do you think it sets up a cycle of way too high expectations and maybe parents should kind of ease up on,
I don't know,
instilling
because
that holiday stuff?
I also think you don't have to try very hard to create adults who look back and think that's what Christmas was.
Yeah.
Even when it was not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Also, this is one I heard recently, and I've really been getting it in my head lately. I've talked before, my old line is you can't not screw up your kid. You just have to figure out how. I've talked about that before. It is impossible to raise a child and not screw them up in some way. The best you can do is sort of influence which way. I heard a much more succinct version that I think gets the point across better recently. Parenting is abuse. I think it is unavoidable because, by definition, my parents are 90 to 95% of my interaction during the time period where most of my deep-seated childhood traumas are formed. And I don't think it's possible to get away from. And I don't think it's the fault of a parent. I think it's just the nature of it. Something is going to fuck me up. And I'm going to pick whatever the best option is out of the options my parents gave me. Well, and some parents do some really horrific shit, and that's a great one that you can fixate on. Some of them do little dumb crap where they just say a joke that I don't think is funny when I'm three and it rides in my head for the rest of my life. Or, as a friend said the other day, an older sibling tells a five-year-old them they're ugly and they internalize that for literally five decades. Because it's what's there. There's a nature at that age, sort of in the loss of innocence. You create these traumas, and I think you create them out of what's there. And when I look back at my holiday experiences, I can tell you a lot of great ones. I can also tell you some that were horrendous, that give me nightmares to this day, and they were no one's fault. It was just the way things fit. And I think even then, 8-year-old me was like, this isn't how Christmas is supposed to go, and that's how it went this year, so it's horrible. Like, the only way to avoid that is to just literally beat your child with a sock full of nickels every Christmas from the first one, and so they can never have any positive expectations of Christmas forever. I would be remiss if I did not mention that probably creates some other issues.
Yeah, it's not a recommendation. You're not.
No, no. All you can do is the best you can do, and it's hard to know when to let that stuff go. And as with all things, it's about boundaries. And children have to hit a point where they create boundaries, and sometimes they create boundaries. I did this as a kid. I established a boundary. My parents respected it. And after it was established for a while, I was like, this is a terrible boundary. I hate this. I have made my life knowingly worse. And so then we got rid of that boundary. And then other boundaries, parents have a harder time understanding. Some boundaries are good boundaries, and the parents get them, and it's all great now. And that's wonderful. It's all over the place.
Well, I think a lot of problems too are are created. I mean, people talk about the nuclear family like this is some kind of natural unit, and it isn't. This is an artificial thing that we've created, and I and it's a bad artificial thing we've created. I don't think there's any benefit to cutting society up into nuclear families. I don't think it helps the parents. I don't think it helps the children. I don't think it helps the society. This idea that our society is organized on these units called the family, and it's two parents, and it's still largely
one boy, one girl.
Yeah, and it's largely still heteronormative parents, you know, still largely that, even though, you know, we're allowing different forms and stuff. We still think mom and dad, two kids, 2.4 kids or whatever. You know, I don't think that this idea, and it contributes to this idea too, that when a married couple is these two people together, that's all they need is just each other. That's absurd. Of course, that's not, there's no way that two people can be all those two people need, you know?
And it's all expectations. You're talking purely about people think if I set the variables this way, this is what's going to happen. If I get married to the one person of the opposite sex of me and I have the requisite number of kids, this is how our life will go.
It's just ridiculous. I mean,
if I buy the right foods for Christmas and get the right presents, this is how Christmas is going to go.
But I think that when you're talking about how, you know, parents are always going to screw up their kids, and you pointed out that, you know, during your most formative years, these two people are your biggest influence. Well, what if instead of having two people being a big influence during that time, it was 20 people instead? You know, would that make it better or worse? I mean, I tend to think that would be a more positive experience. It would make it less likely that these two people who actually sired you are going to screw you up.
It makes it different. And I can explain this because I have known people who were raised in more of that situation. And sometimes it's great because I'm here on the outside because I don't got no kids. And I'm like, wow, their parents are really dropping the ball on this part. But you know what? They went and they stay with relatives, or they go to daycare and things. And they picked up those skills that I feel their parents were lacking in teaching.
Mm.
However, there are other times where I'm like, their parents are really crushing it. It's going great. Now they go to daycare and they are picking up some terrible habits and ideas.
That is true. That does happen. Yeah.
From elsewhere. It is a loss of control on the part of the parent, and it makes it different.
Yeah.
I will admit, you can start mathing it to a degree if you get diverse enough influences, no one thing is theoretically going to get hit too hard. But again, it's just different. You just got to do the best you can do. And there's so much random chance. Or be like me, don't breed, and usher in the end of the species quicker. Save us all some trouble. I'm really genocidal today. Today specifically. I mean, I'm normally a misanthrope, but today I'm really like, let's just end this. Let's stop pretending that the whole human race thing has gone well. Let's give the jellyfish their time. Let them try. Let them be the dominant species. Or pig.
I'm just
Animal Farm notwithstanding. I want to see the pigs do their thing.
I'm just too pro-human, I guess.
You are. It's gross.
A lot of people think so.
How you feel behind closed doors is fine, but when you shove your pro-humanity stuff right in my face. It's gross. Gross.
I don't mean to offend.
All right, read us a question or an email.
Are you sure?
Do it, because we're running out of time, and we haven't done them so much lately.
Beth.
Although we need more. Put more in. TheMagicalTalkingHead@gmail.com. At your fingertips, baby.
You should be reading this because it's for you, I guess.
Ooh.
Beth says, Tony.
Yes.
Tony, your new diet sounds interesting. Can you tell us more about it? Is it a certain name/school of thought of diet, or did your dietitian make it up? Interested in reading more about it, so knowing what search terms to reference would be helpful. Best, Beth.
All right. This reminded me of a very important thing.
And so you're not going to answer her question?
I will, but first. Beth, formerly Westlake, I believe now she goes by her married last name, Bianco. Or maybe hyphenated, I don't know. Beth is short for Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. You know what else is short for Elizabeth? Betty.
Yeah, Betty. Yeah.
You know what Bianco means in, I believe, Italian? White.
Okay.
So despite the fact that she's dead, Betty White is one of our most loyal listeners.
Well, that's one way to look at it.
I think it's pretty awesome. So congratulations, Betty White. So, all right. It is not a named diet. I believe it is a specific thing invented. Because here's the thing. This diet is not designed for me to lose weight. This diet is not designed for me to be healthier. Those things happen, but that's not the point of the diet. This diet is to teach me a lifestyle where I will have the most success with a teeny tiny stomach with almost no digestive enzymes. And so it is designed for me to eat just the right amount of food, no more, no less, and in a perfectly balanced set of nutrients, although it still involves post-surgery taking a lot of vitamins. It was specifically designed for me. It is a 2,000 calorie a day diet that is very much based on my whole deal and not necessarily true for everybody. I think I talked about it before. Everything breaks down into four categories. Fats, carbs, proteins, and then non-starchy vegetables get to be their own category because there's a lot of nutrients in there. And I just get a certain number of bubbles of each of those per meal. Not per day, per meal. I'm not allowed to move them around. So, for example, breakfast. 2 bubbles of carbs, 4 bubbles of fat, 4 bubbles of protein. No more, no less. No veggies in the morning. Not allowed veggies. I think in the morning they would probably just count as carbs. So, for example, 2 pieces of toast, 4 scrambled eggs, that's my breakfast. Because an egg is 1 bubble of fat and 1 bubble of protein. What else is a bubble of protein is 1/4 cup of non-fat cottage cheese. What else is a bubble of fat is 1 teaspoon of butter. So if I wanted to, I could put some butter in the pan, do 3 eggs plus a little cottage cheese, scramble that all up, and that would also count. I have also done 2 pieces of toast, which is my 2 carbs, and each of them gets 1 tablespoon of peanut butter, which counts as 1 bubble of protein and 2 bubbles of fat. So that's all my fat and 2 out of 4 bubbles of protein. And then I supplement it with a non-fat yogurt or 2 ounces of lean deli meat, and that's my breakfast. Or I could do the egg thing. And then for my carbs, I could do 1 packet of the low sugar oatmeal I get and 1 piece of fruit. For example, I recently got some golden kiwis. You ever have a golden kiwi? They're nice. They're like regular kiwis, but a little sweeter. I like them.
So this is a standard kind of thing for people who are going through the kind of surgery you're contemplating going through.
Yes.
And that's called what? That surgery is called what?
Bariatric surgery is the most common catch-all name for it.
Okay.
The possible surgeries there is the gastric bypass, which is the old grand dame of these surgeries, which is where we disconnect your esophagus from your stomach and instead hook it up just after your stomach. So you get a little pouch of food in your esophagus. And the rest just bypasses it completely, so most of it doesn't get digested. The newer version is what they call a sleeve. And that is, so your stomach has you know, your esophagus goes down, then it all widens into the stomach, and then it goes down into the small intestine again. They basically cut off most of the stomach, so it just is like a tube. So the part that was your stomach is a slightly wider tube, but not very wide. And again, you lose most of the space and most of the spots that produce the enzymes. So you're not only able to eat less food, but you are digesting less of it, absorbing less of it. I don't know that I think it is a good diet for someone to take who is not considering the procedure, which I am not. At this point, I am beginning to try and play around with this. Of the things in this diet, how many of them are specific to if I'm getting the surgery, and how many are just good health moves? But in general, if I'm only eating 2,000 calories a day, relatively balanced amongst fats and carbs and proteins and vegetables, and I'm exercising daily, that's pretty good for me.
Yeah, that's
like that will be a pretty good diet for the rest of my life. And so that's sort of what I'm shooting for. But we'll see. A lot of it in my case is about just eating less. There are issues of balance, but a lot of that has to do with nutrient absorption, which is less of an issue. But I don't know. This week I was supposed to meet with the nutritionist again, but I got this COVID scare and I thought I was sick, which I may have been. I still don't know. So I didn't do it. I'll do it next week. But I don't think it has a particular name.
Can I ask, if you're talking about eating less, does any of this cross over into your work with your therapist about, you know, issues you have with eating or anything like that?
Not as of yet. As I think I've said before, I've come to the realization that all of my excessive eating is emotion and psychological based. It's never because I'm hungry. It's never that kind of thing. There's never a real physical response. It's because I'm in a mood or I've got a craving or something like that. So the possibility of that is occurring to me. I'm not having that much of a problem. I told you, I went to the doctor after I came back. I lost a bunch of weight, despite having fucked around on my whole trip.
And cheated, yeah.
So I don't know. But it is interesting. I actually... So a lot of things we've been working on in therapy are either in sort of a controlled place right now, or they involved specific events that have come and gone.
Mm.
And so I've kind of been thinking, like, what's my next deal? And I think my next deal now is going to be, how do I stop caring so fucking much about everything, especially things that have nothing to do with me? Because I've learned a lot about what I think of as universal experience and is in fact just me, and not putting that on other people and not expecting them to behave the way I behave or trying to make them behave the way I behave. This is what I've spent a lot of time in my therapy on, and I feel like I've made tremendous progress in doing better at not putting that on other people. Unfortunately, all those impulses now just rattle in my head. So I'm better at not telling this dude he's living his life wrong, which is a very good thing. I am constantly screaming at him in my head about how he's living his life wrong. I need to figure out a way to stop that. So I think that's going to be a step. I've done this many times over the years and never had a lot of success. I think I'm going to take another stab at some form of meditation exercise. I think that could be very good for me. but we will see. But yeah, in terms of what this diet is, I don't think it has a name. And in general, I'm very opposed to diets as a concept. I've gotten very into intuitive eating, insofar as I can. I have certain medical conditions that limit that, because intuitive eating is very much about, like, what do I want to eat? Why do I want to eat that? Given the why, am I going to eat that? And what does that mean? And just very deliberate decisions on what you're putting in your body. And that's great. But regardless of what I want to eat and why I might want to eat that, sometimes my blood sugar is fucked up and I need to either eat that or not eat that or eat something different. So I have limits in that sense. But I'm trying to do a lot more of, like, oh, I want some more of that. How come? Stop for a second and think about it. Which, I mean, just ultimately, I'm just working on a bunch of mindfulness, which is a problem because nobody can accurately explain what mindfulness is, including people who teach about mindfulness.
Yeah.
So that's fun. If you've got opinions about this stuff, and don't pretend like you don't. It would be absolutely wild if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, I have no opinion on anything they said. That would be weird. If you're one of those, go to the blog and tell me about it. I'm excited about that, to finally meet somebody who has no opinions about any of the stuff we talked about. I mean, we're controversial, you know. We're throwing out aliens and diets and just all sorts of that. I literally said on this podcast, parenting is abuse. Like, come at me, breeders. Do it. Go to the blog. Tell us what your thoughts on this stuff are. Also, what you've been up to. Everybody's been very quiet lately. I don't know if that's something we did or if they're all busy or what. But, like, let us know you're out there. We love you all very much. Except one of you. Not saying which one, but you know. We all know. But yeah, go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com.
Because also, podcasting is abuse. That's why he said
podcasting that. Is abuse. Way to pull it out at the last second for the episode title. Nice. tell us your thoughts on all this at magicaltalkinghat.com. Email us. Have an influence in what we talk about, because somebody needs to rein us in, and you can do it by sending us an email, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with all your rude things we should talk about. Also, go over to aethertheater.com, look at William's just Boulevard of Broken Dreams over there, and also go to smashwords.com and pick up my book Odd Wings for $3 and read it. Or tell people you did. Make other people read it. You don't even have to read it. If you force 3 people in your life to read that book, you get a get out of reading free card. So, literature, as with most things in life, is just a pyramid scheme. So if you can get your downstream enough people reading my book, I don't care if you read it, and you'll make ultra double diamond level at the convention. It'll be great. Wow, now I really got to go and try and figure out how to turn my book into a pyramid scheme. I like this idea.
Yeah.
And then listen again next week, because we'll do it again next week, because that's what we do.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.